rehearsal for the Brahms Piano Quartet No. 1 in G minor, William Goodwin often leads the discussion when the musicians decide where to slow down or speed up, where to get louder or softer, where to sustain notes. Goodwin, who plays viola, says Brahms, like other classical composers, wrote music with clear instructions for performers to follow. But he says the musicians still add their imprint.
When we talk about a piece, it's not just dots on a page. It's not just a set of instructions or a recipe. Or maybe it's like a recipe would be for a really experienced cook. You start off with something that tastes good, but you figure out a way to make it taste just a little bit better. And that's what the rehearsal process and the practice process is for, to make something new and interesting out of the same material. You wouldn't want a Shakespeare play to be read the same way every time, nor would you want a piece of music to be played the same way every time, which is why live music is so great.
Goodwin says classical composers' intentions are made clear with cues written into the music, the key, the tempo, the pacing, the volume, to determine what emotions the composer intended to convey.
For instance, if you have major, fast, and short, it could be giddy. If you have major, fast, and longer, it can just be happy. If you have minor and short and fast, it can be very, very angry. It can be almost monstrous if it's long and minor and fast.
Johannes Brahms had to go to work to help support the family.
Festival director Michael Hill relates the story that is sometimes credited with affecting Brahms' style.
The work that he found was at a local pub in northern Germany. It was a port town, and it's reported that it was a brothel. So he was 14 years old, playing folk music and popular music of the time, and there's a strong opinion that that influenced Brahms greatly in his compositions.
Hill says the Romantic era started with Beethoven, but Brahms greatly expanded on it.
Anytime you hear Brahms, you hear this beautiful line. It's connecting. It's extending the phrase, continuing that melody in a beautiful and rich manner.
The honky-tonk, it requires a looser swing rhythm, whereas in the classical we're being very precise because the composer is very precise with their musical notation.
Alan Morrison is a classical pianist. That's him you heard playing the Brahms, but for the final concert he tackled a new venture, ragtime. This is Kitten on the Keys, written by Zez Confrey.
And the honky-tonk is more just of a written-out improvisation, so you have to treat it a little more freely like an improvisation, and it affords the performer to be more spontaneous.
However, ragtime is still a composed piece of music, and Morrison says it's important to find a balance that honors the composer's intent but allows the musician to be expressive. Zez Confrey memorialized his interpretation of Kitten on the Keys. His 1921 recording can be found online. Morrison listened to it when deciding how to play it.
And it's just very straightforward. I'm adding a little more playfulness, I think. I don't think he would mind.
So in the 1890s, a new style of music was born. This improvised piano, this ragged music.
Artistic director Dawn Marie Edwards researched the history of ragtime and jazz, the breakthrough music that originated in the American South, composed primarily by black musicians.
People saw it as immoral, threatening to American youth. Why was it so immoral? Because of the syncopation, that displaced beat.
Edwards says ragtime was loose music that led to propulsion and swing. In other words, listeners wanted to get up and move. She says the American Federation of Music forbade its members from playing it.
But prostitutes and madams of brothels recognized the music for what it was, innovative and fun. It was the same story with jazz.
Edwards says composers like Jelly Roll Morton and Scott Joplin made money playing cat houses.
Not only did the music survive, but it flourished under brothels and prostitution. And then from there, the jazz was integrated like from composers like Debussy and Ravel, Stravinsky into a new form of classical music.
Now, Gershwin and Ravel had a close connection. Gershwin actually went to France to study with Ravel.
Festival director Michael Hill tells a story illustrating the power of jazz on 20th century classical composers.
And Ravel told him flat out, you don't want to be another Ravel, you want to be a better Gershwin. And now the influence of this new American music form, jazz and ragtime, had an impact on Ravel.
Hill uses as an example Ravel's Violin Sonata No. 2, Blues and Perpetuum, heard here, played in rehearsal by violinist Eunice Kim and pianist Alan Morrison.
It's a beautiful work. You clearly hear the influence that Gershwin had on him. So here's this new American art form influencing the European masters. They found it exciting. They found it innovative.
Gershwin followed Ravel's advice and mastered a distinctive style. It's jazzy and minor, long and slow, and bluesy, but not blue. At least not blue in the sense of sad. William Goodwin calls it minor-ish.
In jazz, one of the most basic chords is the minor 7. And that's built out of the blues scale. So a lot of times when you hear jazz, it's actually minor, but it's the way it's played.
It's very lazy and sensual. It's not unhappy.
No.
Just
little bit slinky. Yeah.
Little bit slinky and a whole lot sexy. Born out of drawing rooms and concert halls, bars and brothels with a pedigree stretching back to Europe and to Africa, it's melting pot music. Classy and wild, loud and brash, distinctively American. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City.